Hi, and welcome to the Two Birds in Flight podcast,
an interesting mix of all things spiritual, paranormal, and personal growth.
I'm Robin, and I'll be your host. On this podcast, we do cover topics that could be controversial, and these could cause people from various backgrounds to reevaluate their beliefs. That actually speaks to the heart of the spiritual journey. If you enjoy the show, please consider joining our Patreon. The link is in the show notes. In this episode, I'll be talking with a friend of mine about his spiritual awakening and the effects that it's had on his religious beliefs and background. Let's get started. Today, we're going to talk about religion and spirituality and how these two aspects of our human experience, I'll say, how they meet, how they cross one another, and also, I think, where they diverge. And so with me today, I have a friend of mine who we've had these conversations for a while now in private, and I thought this would be interesting for others to hear sort of where we go along this. So I want to mention just quickly how we met. We met online through TikTok, and specifically through my TikTok account, the Two Birds TikTok that I have. And we started to chat back and forth, and we began to see just that we had a connection. And I think what's been really interesting to me is how your background specifically is so different from mine and at the same time so similar when it comes to religion and just having sort of a conservative cultural background. So I want to know a little bit if you'll tell us about that background that you have and like how you grew up, what your heritage is, what your religious experience has been.
Right. Yes, it's a pretty interesting the way we all connect across the world. And I want to start off with saying I would never have thought I'd be speaking to someone in the USA. And I never even thought about going to the USA, let alone talk to someone, plenty of people from the USA. So yes, this journey's been quite very, very interesting, I'd say. So I'm a born Muslim. I follow Islam. Originally, my parents are from India. So we grew up in a very big family. So I'm one of seven siblings. So I've grown up with five sisters, one brother. We also had my grandparents living with us. So it wasn't just my parents, my grandparents, who were born and raised in India. My mum, she was born in South Africa. So she was there for about 11 years. And then she moved to the UK. So she has a lot of an upbringing of the UK side. Whereas my dad came to the UK when he was about 15, 16. And he grew up in there. He kind of dealt with a lot of racism in the UK at that time, back in the early 60s, I think. But growing up, we've been part of a community. So when we moved to London, we were part of this community with our local mosque. My granddad has always had an input with local mosques, not just in the UK, but in India as well as Bradford, which is a little city in the UK. So he's always been well known. And my granddad has been this big figure in the community, not just in the community, but our village in India, because he was one of seven brothers and he was the eldest. So when he's predominantly very like authoritative, the masculine man like that you would always think of. And his mentality is that I've got X amount of daughters, but my sons and their children are my grandchildren, whereas my daughter's children are not my grandchildren. They're somebody else's grandchildren. So my granddad only has three grandsons, according to his logic. So it's me, my brother, and my cousin, who's much more younger than me. And I've grown up with a lot of women around me. So I have five sisters, whereas my uncle, my dad's brother, has 10 daughters and one son. So it's a very, very big family. So for us, it's always growing up around your dad's family. So I don't know much about my mom's family. My mom's parents died before I was born. My granddad also had this mentality that this is all mine, like this is my family, so my daughters have to also come. Now, with his logic about the daughters are not yours after marriage, it doesn't apply to him, but it applies to everyone else. But with him, it's my daughters and my sons, and I would control everything that happens underneath. So we come from a very controlling family, even the women. My dad's sisters are very, very controlling. They have a lot of strong masculine energy in them. So there is about being the man, regardless of them being female. On top of that, having Indian culture, a lot of culture, which when you look at the history of India and Muslims, a lot of tradition has been used in religion. So Islam, I think now that I'm getting older, I'm also realizing the difference between culture and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And always been kind of, we've had religion forced upon us from childhood. So we've always had to go mosque after school. So we used to finish school at 3:30 and then 5 o'clock is time to be in the mosque until 7 p.m. And mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. We were taught Quran in Arabic. However, we weren't taught what the Quran meant. We were only taught how to read the Quran. So as far as I'm aware, I only know how to read the Quran, but I do not understand it. So we grew up, this is God's words, but we don't know what God's saying. We can just read it. It's like learning to read French and not knowing a word of what it means. So as far as I'm concerned, I can tick the box and say, yes, I know how to read the Quran. When I'm praying my five daily prayers, I can read extracts from it, but I have no clue what I am saying.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as we've grown older, we've realized well, this is not it. We've learned a lot of religion through what we call hadiths. Hadith is like extracts in the books of the prophets, Prophet Muhammad's teachings of how we should be living our life. When you read the Quran, it's like a range, because I've read the Quran in English as I've grown up because I wanted to know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find that God talks about religion a lot, but not so much about your daily lifestyle and how you should live your life. But a lot of it comes from the hadiths of our kind of books that we follow. And the spanner in the works for me is my sexuality. So growing up in a family where I am predominantly surrounded by women and not men, I've been used to a lot of female company. However, I'm more attracted to men. Now, being bisexual from a very young age where I didn't even know the right or wrong, you have your battle of it's not allowed in society, it's not allowed in culture, and it's not allowed in religion. So it was a constant battle growing up thinking, one, I'm the only gay Asian, I'm the only gay Muslim, I'm the only gay in the world, because I wasn't exposed to a lot of things. So you're always contemplating, am I in the right, am I in the wrong? Now, when I look at my upbringing, we were forced a lot to pray. So after my grandmother died, when I was about 11 years old, I was sleeping in my granddad's room. Mm-hmm. So he used to be quite religious. So he would wake up five times. Well, he'd pray five times a day. And one of them is the dawn prayer. And he would wake us up. And it's funny enough, I mentioned this today, that if we didn't wake up, he would slap me on my bum to wake me up. Mm-hmm. And it was like forced that you have to pray this. And I had to literally be in his room for every prayer. And he taught me the strictness of how to pray and the correct positions to be in. And we were always taught, even in the mosques in the days, that you have to be, we were taught out of fear. And if we made a mistake reading the Quran, we would get hit in the mosque. So we'd have the imam would come in with a stick. If you make a mistake, you get a stick. And it used to hurt because a lot of the mosque teachers used to get a bit abusive. And luckily I wasn't abused as much, but when you look at your the other children in the class who got a bit rebellious to them, they would get more hits. And it were people hated going to the mosque because we didn't want to get hit. And then when we come home and tell our parents when we got hit, what we were programmed with, oh, when you get hit in a certain part, that part is not going to burn in hell. So now when you think about that, well, hang on, but I'm going to the mosque to learn to go to heaven, but you're saying the bit I got hit in won't burn in hell. So why would I be going to hell in the first place? So
exactly.
It's when you get older, you start realizing this, that, well, hang on, I was taught this out of fear, that it's okay to get hit, but it wasn't okay to get hit.
And that's really where the culture comes in.
Yeah.
You know, like it that's not necessarily a religious teaching, but that's something parents are going to say, you
exactly.
know, to like, yeah, I understand. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Unless you came home with a bleeding nose, it was okay for the teacher.
Right.
it used to be fun. I'm not going to lie. We saw some amazing kids rebelling against the teachers. So yeah, it was pretty interesting. But it's when you get into when you leave mosque at the age of about 15, 16, that's the age you would normally leave. I was taught learning a lot of the history of Islam through Urdu, and that's not my mother tongue. My mother tongue is Gujarati, but Urdu is something that I've learned through mosque and school. So I was able to read it, so I understand it from a South Asian perspective. So any of these books that were written in South Asia. So I've already got people who have different school of thoughts. Now, Islam is so broad, you'll have different schools that we follow, and it's based on interpretation. And this is what I found as I got older, that a lot of Islam has been based on interpretation of certain scholars who said this is acceptable and this isn't acceptable, because that's been passed down through generations. We kind of thought, okay, it's normal for us. It could be certain events that when you now realize that this event wasn't right, and a lot of mosques are now understanding that certain events that we were celebrating, the classic one I found was 15 days before Ramadan starts. South Asian people have mostly made this a night to celebrate. And it's not a celebration. They say this is a significant night because your life is written for the year ahead. But when you look into Islam, there's no relevance to this. So people have, and we used to have the mosques open all night during this night. And there was tradition of handing out sweets. It was only about 5 years ago I was looking into it, and it was actually an Iranian tradition. It wasn't a South Asian tradition. It was a place where on this certain date there used to be travelers traveling through Iran, and because they noticed this increase in travelers, they decided that we're going to make it a significant night, and we're going to start giving out sweets. And they adopted it as a religious tradition afterwards. So now, when you come across these nights, and you're at my age of 40, we're like, well, hang on, why is this mosque still open when there's no relevance to it? And then you start talking to them, it's like, our forefathers have done it. Where's the relevance? Where do you find the evidence in Islam to back it up? And it's very difficult because some people will give you the reference, but that's from a South Asian author. It's not how true is it? So yes, we've had a lot of conditioning in the way we have through school of thoughts and people's opinions. For example, you go to a South Asian mosque, they won't allow women. Islam doesn't say women are not allowed in the mosque. But if you go to a South Asian mosque, they'll say, no, women are not allowed. Religion says women are not allowed. Realistically, they are allowed. So when I have conversations like this with my father, he'll be like, no, women are not allowed. And I'll be like, well, this is where it says women are allowed. And then we get in trouble by saying, oh, but what do you know? You lot are today's generation. You don't know nothing. You trust Google. Well, Google's more of an easy thing. Where in your days there was no Googles. You had to travel to God knows how many places just to get an answer. Whereas we can go on Google and trust our own instinct to know what we're reading is correct. And we have free will. And this is what Islam does teach us. God says, you have free will, you have a free, and my personal opinion is this is when you get to a certain age in your life, you have every right to question your own religion. Am I in the right religion? Should I be following a religion? Because this is what I was born into. So how do I know I'm not following a religion of the forefathers? And the classic example of this I found is the story of Prophet Abraham. He was born into a family where his father was an idol maker, but he wasn't an idol worshiper. And when he questioned his father, Abraham's father said, well, this is what my forefathers did, so we just follow that. But why did it take a 7-year-old boy, Abraham, to show that you can't always follow your forefathers? So if we look at that and say, well, okay, if we in Islam give a prophet such as Prophet Abraham a high ranking, we can look at his life and say, well, he questioned his father. Was he right in his religion? So we have every right, and you have your own discernment afterwards to make up, is this my religion? And then obviously, as you get older, you start questioning all this. And I went through depression in about 10 years ago when I had broken up with an ex-boyfriend of mine who I was dating for 5 years. And it was a bit of a narcissistic relationship on both parts, me and him being narcissists towards each other. It was a secret relationship while I was married to my wife, which then led me into a dark place, and I went through depression. And that depression was the biggest gift that I could ever have. So when I look back, I see it as a gift because it unlocked things for me that I never knew I had, like passions I never knew existed. Always been a people person. And then I got interested in religion and history. So I started researching more, and I started researching a lot of different religions. And one thing leads to another thing. My relationship with God got better. So I would park up in the night, have conversations with God, and that was my closeness to God. I didn't have to sit in a mosque to get close to God. I could sit in my car and have conversations. And then I think in 2020 is when I had what we call the spiritual awakening, because I thought I had done everything and I was okay. I was content with life. I wasn't happy. I was missing. And I remember I used to say to God, and it's been, but now that I look back, for over 15 years, I used to say to God, I want someone that's just like me to come into my life and love me just like the way I love people. And ideally, I want it to be a man because I want the comfort of a man. I remember saying this. And I remember going on pilgrimage once and I said, because I've always been taught to believe being gay in Islam is a sin. And when we talk about homosexuality in Islam, and not just Islam, I think in the most Abrahamic faiths, we are quick to be reminded of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's the first story we are told about Prophet Lot.
Right.
And we are constantly reminded about this, that it's wrong, it's a sin. But then I started realizing, well, hang on, if I'm going to accept that it's a sin, what I have to also accept, God doesn't say that you cannot love someone of the same sex. But if we then look at, is the act of having sex a sin? If I want to believe that as a yes, then I can choose to believe that as a yes. But if I've been attached to someone by heart or soul, then that's a love I have no control in. So can I say to God, well, I fell in love with a man? Yes, because we were built with emotions. So yes. Can I control my actions to a certain degree? Yes. But when you feel so intimately close with someone, it's very hard to then refrain from the act. As I've grown older, obviously we believe in Islam that a lot of things are a test in life. I can accept that yes, we have tests and some people have different tests from another person. And it was through the spiritual awakening, I've started realizing that maybe I am a test for someone. So it could be I'm a test for my family, who are a very strict Muslim, to kind of see how they interact with a gay son. Do they disown him and disregard me as a human being? Or do they accept me for me being their son or their brother and kind of come to terms with, do I still love this person the same way I love without knowing who they're sleeping with behind closed doors? So it was a bit of a challenge. My sexuality came out just before I went into depression about 12 years ago. I came out to my family by choice, but I felt very pressured because I wasn't happy in my marriage. So I came up by choice because I wanted freedom. I just wanted to be free. I didn't decide if I wanted to be gay or if I wanted to be straight. I just didn't know what I wanted. But I was kind of pressured to take my wife back at that time, which I did out of pity. Because with me, when I've broken up in relationships, it's never been me that's ended relationships. It's been the other person. And when they come back, I've always felt bad. And I've never stood up for myself and said, well, no, you walked away. So I felt bad, well, I was made to feel bad because my daughter was a year old then and I took her back thinking, okay, we can make this work. But as time's gone on, the urge and the yearning for someone that I didn't even know existed was getting stronger and stronger. It was in 2019, I remember we were at work and we were writing a letter to ourselves of how we would be in a year's time. I had a code word for this person that I was waiting for. My code word was only one that I understood, and I used to call him my one close bro. So every time I'd done vision boards or wrote letters, I would always mention him as my one close bro. Mm-hmm. And I remember writing a letter saying, your one close bro is finally here. Because we were told we were going to reopen this letter in 2020, a year later. Never got to see that letter, but I knew what I had written. And what happens in September 2020, my wife saying, it's her birthday, let's go away. And she wanted to go away to a city where my ex was from. And I didn't want to go there. But I said, you know what, it's your birthday, let's spoil you. Let's treat you like a queen, took her. And that's when I met what we call our twin flame. So I literally met somebody I was looking for, me in a younger version. But I didn't know until a couple of weeks after connecting with this person. I was in this city, never spoke to him. It was through a dating app. We started speaking. It was 2 weeks after that when he had come to my city because he wanted to get away from his relationship problems. It's the moment I locked eyes with him and I recognized who he was. And I said to my girl, this is the person I've been waiting for years. Still didn't think anything of it. And life became so much better after interacting with this person. My financial abundance has increased out of nowhere, just randomly overnight. I'm getting double the income I was making. I'm a manifestation. I always believe in manifestation, but in Islam, we call it dua. And every time I'm praying to God, I will see that I'm asking God for something. And within 10 minutes, I'm seeing the reality of what I'm asking for. Now, I'm getting shocked that where the hell did I unlock all this power from? But I've noticed from a childhood that I've been blessed in many ways. And I've always questioned myself that, why am I so blessed if I'm gay? If I've done so much good in life, why am I still getting everything when I'm asking God for it? And I remember having an argument with my sister one day, and I said to my sister, because she said to me that for you, your destination is hell. It's never going to be heaven. So I said, well, who are you to decide when judgment day hasn't even come? And she said, it says in the Quran that you will go to hell. So I said, then why is it that God is providing me everything I want? When I ask God for something, I am blessed and he gives me everything. And he gives me more than I'm asking for. And her response was, that's because God says that this is your heaven on earth for you, as your destination will always be hell. And it really hit me thinking, well, hang on, who is my sister to decide? And I said to her, be careful you don't trade places with me, because if you end up in hell and I end up in heaven just because of that statement, be very, very careful. Obviously, she's a very strict Muslim and she's like, can't make any mistakes. I forgave her for it. But then when I started realizing, well, hang on, why am I unlocking all these, I want to say benefits, but these blessings that I'm unlocking, that I can speak something and in 10 minutes, people are shocked and said, how the hell are you doing that? When people are asking me if I'm practicing black magic, because I can see results within 10 minutes. And I'm fascinated. I was telling my mom said, be careful who you're sharing this good news with. You don't want evil eye. But I said, no, mom, it's not me being egoistic or being proud or anything. It's more about, I want people to ask God and do the same what I'm doing. I want people to ask him and they will get what I'm getting. And then I noticed that my blessings were just forever increasing. And my connection with this guy, I mean, we were living in two different cities. It's when we went abroad on holiday together, I didn't know this guy from Adam. I just trusted myself to go on a holiday with him. He trusted me going to a different country, and he's only known me 3 weeks. And my spiritual awakening happened in Cyprus when I confessed my feelings to my twin. And I said to him, I'm really sorry, but I know you're in a relationship and equally I'm in a relationship. But if I do not tell you this right now, I'm going to suffer more. But I've had this attachment to you ever since I've met you. And it's so strong, I can't shake it off. And I love you a lot. And it's crazy because I don't know you to love you. But I feel this intense love for you that I cannot describe. And he looked at me and he started shaking. And he went mad at me. And he went literally mad. And I was like, what the hell did I just do? It's not where my spiritual awakening happened. It's one night we were sharing a bed and it was all clean, nothing sexual. It was, we were just in the same bed and I felt close with him because I felt this connection every time I would cuddle up. And at that time I felt I had a cold sore, which was a really good thing for me because it prevented us from having any sexual activity. So at that time I allowed the cold sore to be there, as much as I hated it, but it was good that it was there. And one night he had walked into the room crying and he was in a lot of guilt and he's saying, I shouldn't be here with you. I have someone that loves me and I love someone else and I shouldn't be here with you. And I don't know what happened, but that whole night I did not sleep. And we were meant to go quad biking the very next day. And I remember waking up and I said, guys, I can't come quad biking. And my twin had got very angry with me because he thought I was annoyed with him. So it was the night where I didn't sleep and we were meant to go quad biking. Something was really bothering me. And I remember being on a quad bike and my life was playing in front of me like a film. And I could see my children in their 20s. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And it was like this film just playing. And I'm like, oh my God, am I going to die? Am I going to die? And I remember saying to my friend before I had gone to Cyprus that I don't think I'm coming back from Cyprus. And it's like I'm going to die in Cyprus. And so all I kept telling her, and she was like, don't be silly. And I just felt like I'm going to die in Cyprus. So we were on this quad bike. And I have no idea what's going on. And all these visions and images are flashing through my mind. I'm seeing my mom and she's making me cry. And then our instructor stopped our group and told me to get off the quad bike. And I was so confused as to why he was telling me to get off the quad bike. And he made me sit with my friend. And my twin was there. And me and my twin were not talking that day. And my friend asked me, what happened? And I said, I have no idea why he stopped me. But something within me doesn't feel right. And later on, the instructor came up to my friend and he said, keep an eye on your friend. There's something about, and a lot of people die out here on these quad bikes. So I was like freaked out. Like, what the hell? So I was like, Wow, that and my friend was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And my friend didn't know anything about my sexuality. He knew nothing about me and my twin. He was just like, we were very religious people, so we were like, "Let's just pray." And we were praying. We were quite close to religion at that time, me and my friend, because we were going through some kind of emptiness within our lives, so we were a bit drawn to religion. It's when I came back to the UK, I started feeling suicidal, and I couldn't understand these emotions where they were coming from. I was feeling severe anxiety, and I was feeling just wanting to cry, but not being able to cry, just suicidal thoughts coming constantly. I mean, I didn't know what it was. It's when I reconnected with my twin at the time, I realized I was connected to his emotions and I could feel his emotions when we were apart. And it was quite freaky because I can feel his physical pain, I could feel his emotional pain, I could feel when he was hungry, which was just something really new to me that I never knew existed. And it's after that, it was like a whirlwind of events, and like randomly coming across a tarot that resonated with me so well. And I was like, I'm a Muslim. I don't believe in tarots. Where the hell did this come from? I remember saying to my friend, "Look at this tarot," and he was like, "Bro, that's haram. Don't pay that attention. Don't pay that attention. It's haram." I was like, "Yes, I know, but just listen. How the hell did this woman know that I went through this? Where I went home and then I closed my eyes for 2 minutes and I saw this man in my vision and he was talking to me, telling me he's my guide." I was like, "And this woman just told me that recently your guides have been in touch with you and you're refusing to acknowledge it." I said, "How the hell does she know this?" And he's like, "This is haram. Disregard it, disregard it." And that's when the angel numbers came. In Islam, we don't believe in numerology. Okay. We don't believe in certain parts of this that we've learned on the spiritual path. And it was just one after the other. Now, when I come home and things were kind of getting more intense into this journey, my wife is now thinking I'm crazy because I'm explaining that I am connected to this man who I didn't know I have a strong pull to. And I said, I can't understand that when I'm thinking of him, he calls me straight away. Or when he's hungry, I know when he's in pain, I'm feeling it. Even to the point when he's having sex, I can feel it. And I said, this is intense feeling that I cannot break free from. I've been trying. And this is prayer we do in Islam, where we want guidance from God. I don't know the full meaning of the prayer, but we specifically say to God that if this is good for me, bring it close to me. And if it harms me or my religion, keep it further away. And every time I've done this prayer for guidance with my twin came closer to me, which was really surprising because I'm thinking, hey, I'm gay now. Why would God send me another man when it says specifically, if this is wrong for me, keep it away? And when things were getting intense and I was going through the stages of the twin flame journey, I was seeing more interesting similarities with Islam and spirituality and more with the law of attraction. And this is where I realized a lot of things that we already knew in Islam, but we pick and chose what it was for. I started realizing that soul contracts were created before we were born, but no one talks about this in Islam. But there are people that have mentioned it, that your life is shown to you and you've agreed this. I also realized about multiple dimensions, which people don't realize because we are quick to say when you die, your soul is in your grave and that's where your punishment is. But then when we look at the night journey of Prophet Muhammad, he talks about multiple dimensions, but people don't want to relate this because they don't want to put the puzzles together. They just want to take things as a literal meaning. So when you look at the spiritual side of where does our soul go when we're asleep, we're traveling to different dimensions. So how are we not living in the fifth up 5D, which we learn about in spirituality, the 3D, the 5D? And I often ask people, what if there is another life on that planet? What if we can't see it? We are conditioned by the government of what we see. We've been indoctrinated by the government as to what we know as knowledge. Do we think the moon landing's real? Do we know that? Or are we believing what we're seeing? What if God has said to us in the Quran that we've only given humans certain aspects of belief and knowledge, and the remaining knowledge remains with us? How can we say we know what's on the other side? Because that's what God's not given us knowledge of. And there was a lot of questions that came up to surface, and I'm thinking, well, hang on, I'm finding contradictions now. I'm finding contradictions in religion. Is it actually religion that contradicts it, or is it the people's belief? And it's when I went through just before my dark night of the soul, when everything came to surface with my sexuality, my family, my childhood traumas, everything all came at once. And it was, I'm seeking God, and I've been praying to God that all this is happening. I don't understand it. I'm praying. I'm waking up in the late hours of the night when God says, wake up and I will answer your prayers. I'm doing all the things that's prescribed to us in Islam, but I need answers. And I'm answering tarot. And we're saying there's no coincidences in the world. God doesn't create coincidences. Everything's meant to be. Then why did the tarot come to me? Why did the voices in my head, which made me feel I was crazy, and dreams I'm having, when I'm asking for answers, I'm getting them from dream. And then someone in my family would say, well, that's the devil answering you. Well, why is it that when I'm asking God, the devil is answering? Because I'm asking God direct, not the devil.
Right.
And they'd be like, you've got this one. So it was a lot of battling of, well, why is it that God is answering you and not me? And I think when it came to the sexuality part, that's where it was like, no, you're going through this and you're crazy. It's like, I'm not crazy. I'm chosen to do something. And I, now when I look back at my journey of the last 3 years, I remember having a dream many years ago in my early 20s. And I remember being woken up by something I couldn't see, but I could hear. And this voice is telling me, wake up. And I said, why? And they said, you have to go for jihad. And I was like, jihad? I don't believe in jihad. So why do I need to go for jihad? And then I remember getting out of bed, and my wife was in the hallway, and my mum was there. I said, mum, I need to go. And they said, where? And they said, they're taking me for jihad. But I'm gay. Why me? I'm gay. And she's like, well, if you've been called, you've been called. It doesn't matter. So you've been chosen for it. Now, when I look back, the jihad wasn't necessarily a war. It was fighting for truth.
Mm-hmm.
And now I look at it and I'm looking at my soul purpose of what I should be doing, where people have said to me, oh, you're a natural healer. I kind of think, well, I've been dismissing my gifts that I've been given in my life, such as dream interpretation, psychic abilities, being able to predict what's happening in the future. I've never claimed it because obviously in Islam, we're not allowed to know the future, but it's the title and how we're using it is what was holding me back. Because now I can see myself as a helper to heal people. I don't have to be a healer. I can help someone. So if I have to interpret someone's dreams, why do I notice that people inform me and say, hey, I had a dream about you, or I had this person dream of me? Why? What made them think of me at that moment? It's because God has put an idea in their mind to reach out to me because I have this gift that will help them. And the more I see this and I look along my twin flame journey, which is the journey of self-discovery, it's always brought me back to myself and my truthful, authentic self. So it was never about my sexuality. It was never about religion. It was never about the gifts I had. It was about me being truthful and taking away every belief. So this was like me being Abraham and saying, no, this is not what my dad has taught me. This is not what my granddad has taught me. I've learned this myself. And I decide that I have a choice of being a Muslim. I have a choice of being whichever religion I want. And this was the battle I was facing all my life. I can't be Muslim because I'm gay. But well, hang on, if I can't choose my sexuality, I can choose my religion. And I choose to keep both. And having the belief of, well, tarot reads are haram or it's a sin. Yes, I do kind of believe that to a certain extent. But now I'm questioning, why did it come to me when I asked for help? And talking to other Muslim people on the spiritual journey, I have found same reasons. And Islam is actually a very, very spiritual religion when you look down into the pores. And on my journey, I did walk into my bedroom one day and there was a book and it said spirituality in Islam. And I was like, where the hell did this turn up? And it found me at the right time. It was my nephew, who doesn't even read books, left me a book. And and I was like, wow, perfect timing.
You were supposed to have it.
Exactly. And I was just like, crystals as well. Crystals have appeared to me out of nowhere. I don't believe in crystals, but they appear to me. Manifestation, everything appears to me when it needs to.
Yeah.
And I think with what you taught me, I think that that's the one thing that sticks to me the most is when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's literally what's been happening on this journey.
Yes. Yeah. And I love what you're saying too about, like, I mean, you didn't say this exactly, but the way that words are defined, how important that is in our understanding, because like, for example, Christianity, which is my background, there are so many things that are in scripture that Christians would say they believe. But if you do those things, so crystals are a great example, because I don't know if you know this, but the priest in the Old Testament, they would sew crystals onto their robes before they would go into the Holy of Holies. And the different crystals had different meanings. And there's even stories in scripture about like God's throne being encircled with emeralds, and like just there's different crystals that are described all around heaven, and they all have their spiritual meaning, their spiritual usage. But if Christians see you actually, you know, using a crystal for something, then that's that might be demonic. And it's part of it is like just an issue of like awareness and education. They just don't know. But part of it is the way that we define, just the way that we define things. And so a lot of the things in spirituality that I have come to understand, come to believe in, are things that I probably, you know, last year would have been suspicious of. I would have thought, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's real. But it's so interesting how when you have that experience, you can't deny it anymore because you've experienced it. And so that causes you, I think, to really dig into your religion to see, you know, to figure out the truth, to find out, you know, am I crazy? Is this
100%.
demonic? Or is it real? Like there is a third option where it is actually real, you know? And
100%.
that was what I personally came to, because so for so many of these things, I was like, well, I don't think it's demonic, because my path with the twin flame connection, it's only caused me to grow. It's only made me stronger. And so if this is evil, why is it so good for me? Why is it changing things for the better, you know? And when you go through the dark night of the soul, it's easy to say that's demonic because you do get so depressed and you might have suicidal thoughts. I think everybody does have the suicidal thoughts. And so it's easy for other people to see you going through that. And because they haven't gone through it, they're going to
100%.
label it and say that it's evil. But it's actually, we can only grow through struggle. That is how we grow. And it's like labor pains to have a baby. There has to be pain for progress to be made.
100%.
And I mean, that's just life, you know, no matter what your religion or
It's
your
100% true.
spiritual view is.
I totally agree. My friend said the same thing to me. Oh, you only see these numbers because your mind is now aware of it and it picks up numbers. So, okay, I questioned him. I said, all right, fair enough. Let's accept what you're saying, that my mind is picking up. But when I'm in a deep sleep, and I'm in a very deep sleep, why do I see them in my dreams? Okay, fair enough. My mind's still working overdrive. But then why do I wake up at 444 on the dot? Why does my eyes open just to see that number, 555? They go back to sleep. So that's too much of a coincidence, right? But we don't believe in coincidences. So the more we resist it, the more it's going to be in our face. And I think learning to accept it has been the biggest thing for me, is because I was constantly using religion, using beliefs, culture, and everything to resist everything that's coming to me, until I let go of that resistance and said, just attack me and just come for me. And when you go through that dark night of the soul, you literally take apart, you dissect everything one by one and say, well, okay, I'm being asking source direct, and for me, source is God. And if God says I am whatever you believe I am, and you ask me, I will answer you, then I'm not wrong in believing that. And a lot of people will pick out extracts from the Quran or the verse and say, well, God said this. Yeah, but God, you didn't finish the sentence. God was talking about Egypt at that time. He wasn't
Context.
talking about this. Yes. He wasn't talking about, he wasn't talking about, he was talking about the children of Israel in that subject. And he's saying, well, when they were planning in this specific thing, he was saying that God was planning. He wasn't talking about, yes, we understand when we plan, God plans, and God's plans are greatest. Yes. But you're taking that context, that one sentence out of that verse, and saying this is what it means. But God's talking about a specific incident right there, not about me. He's talking about that specific incident. So people do take it out of context. People take it out and make it fit when they want it to fit. And because they are not going through it, because I've heard voices in my head, I've heard people giving me guidance in my dreams, and you're like, what the hell? And if I said that to my mom, the first thing my mom would say, you need to go get an exorcism because you're being possessed. And that's literally how people would treat me, like I'm possessed because I've heard a voice. I mean, out of all places, why would I wake up? I'm not even in dream mind, being woken up with my twin's name, and I'm like, yo, what the hell? Like, I'm crazy. I literally felt like crazy.
How many prophets heard a voice in their head? I mean, that is what the gift of prophecy is. And I even like I've told my family the same thing. How many prophets heard voices, saw visions, and then ended up having to hide in the desert somewhere because what they're saying is not what
Thank you.
anybody wants to hear,
Thank you.
you know?
Thank
And
you.
it would be easy to say that those prophets are evil, but only because they're saying things you don't want to hear. That doesn't mean they actually are evil. That means more than likely that they are sent by God, because usually what God needs to tell us are things that are going to be painful because it's going to stretch us as people. It's going to change our viewpoint and our perspective.
That's a very interesting point you raised there, because we look at Islam, the Prophet Muhammad. At first, no one believed him because Gabriel went up to Muhammad in the place where he used to go to find peace with God, where he would talk to God. And that's where the angel Gabriel approached him when he came to Arabia and said to people, this is what's happening. They all laughed at him and they thought he was crazy, right? Yes, I understand that God has said to us as Muslims, after Muhammad, there will be no other prophets. We're not being made prophets. We're not being made messengers. We are just being taught to be ourselves. So God never said that I'm not going to continue sending angels in for human form, or I'm not going to think. So when we receive downloads, the prophets did receive them. How was revelations revealed to the prophet apart from the angels coming down in an angel form? I mean, Muhammad took a while to accept Gabriel because he was scared. He was taught fear at first from Gabriel, but then he got used to Gabriel allowing it. I've had times where I've woken up in the night, which I call my download time, and all of a sudden I'm breaking out in a sweat and I'm getting information coming to me, and I'm like, what the hell is this information? So if I'm getting a download, that's coming from God. I mean, I don't have an angel sitting in my room teaching me the A to Z. He's not teaching me the alphabets all over again. It's coming through my intuition. It's coming through dreams. So I have to trust what's coming to me. But who has any right to say it's the devil teaching me when no one has told you the devil is teaching me? So we have to trust. We have to trust, because what if God does turn around and say to us, but I gave you all the signs, I gave you all the things, I wasn't going to write it out in full English for you. It was for you to work out. So who am I to reject anything that's coming from God, whichever form it comes in? And it's up to me to decide, is this right or wrong afterwards,
I
without
think
trusting it.
anytime we get some sort of message like that, that is something that in the Christian New Testament, Paul talks about testing the spirits. And so I think it's important that we look at the content of the message that we get. But honestly, if it is love, then it's God. And I can't tell you how many messages I've gotten that are, they're just straight up love. Like, there's nothing demonic in that. There's nothing evil in that. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, we should not be afraid to share that with other people. We shouldn't be scared of that. There's nothing to be afraid of. Even though it often comes in the middle of the night, like you're saying. But it's when you look at the content and you see that it is the basis of all of it is love. The basis is truth, then there's nothing to make you say that that's evil or demonic, even if the message is hard to hear. Like, even if it is, you know, like God showing you how selfish you've been, that's hard. It's hard to look at that in ourselves, you know, that like the shadow work portion of it, but it's still based in love. It's still there to help you grow.
It's the same concept as karma. People say, and this came to me the other day when someone left a very negative comment on one of my posts, and about well, in twin flames, they're meant to be your mirror soul, and are you not fearful of karma? Therefore, well, hang on, karma is not always negative, it's always positive, it can be positive as well. And when we look at the twin flame journey, they're our mirror soul. Just because they're our mirror, it doesn't mean that they can get away with doing bad, because most of the times you will interact with your twin doing certain things that you don't do, but it's all from your mirror. So you put a mirror in front of them to project something onto yourself, very, very negative. And sometimes you can come as their karma, like the way we go into other people's life as karma. It can be good or bad. It doesn't mean we're bad people or we're there to literally pull out a sword and kill someone. It's about teaching someone that they're in the wrong here. And this is what I call divine intervention. So sometimes me pulling the rug out underneath my twin's feet wasn't a bad intention from me. It was what I was driven to do. And I feel it was divine intervention, because if I didn't do that, he would have continued doing his, what I call, devilish ways, because they were wrong. He was a very narcissistic person. So how else do we teach them that? It's because they're our mirror. We can't let our child get away with doing something wrong without teaching them they're in the wrong. Right. So, of course, I totally believe it's been a very, very interesting journey, I have to say. Eye-opener, to the least. And when you see people who call you crazy and they start experiencing the same signs and synchronicities as you do, my friend, I say to him, I know you want a partner. Shall I pray to God that you have a twin flame? And the first thing he says is, go fuck yourself, because not want to go through
Please,
what you
no.
went through. He literally says that to me. He said, no, you keep that. He says, you keep that. And when he gets numbers now for me, he gets numbers sent to him for me. And he didn't know this until his car broke down for me to go and see him and for me to see a number. It's a very interesting thing. That's another whole long conversation. But if his car did not break down that night, he would not have experienced what I was going through. So he's now become a bit more easy on me. So when he sees numbers, he's like, bro, do you want to go and speak to the number gods? Because I don't understand these numbers. I'm not for you. So we make a joke of it. But yeah. You know what? Sometimes they need to go through that as well just to help us, because there are tools right. in this journey. Just like the tarot. Bro.
Ignorance is bliss. I mean, it was while it lasted anyway. But I mean, I do know that the whole spiritual journey, because it does bring you back to yourself. Yep. It is a blessing, but it is disguised. It is very disguised.
Yes.
It, especially in the beginning, it can be really hard to see how it's going to be beneficial. But then, like, in no time, you can see how changed you are.
Yeah, 100%. I can see all the layers of me that are no longer existing. Would I stand up to intolerance of behavior? No. I don't stand up for people disrespecting me multiple times. I can now stand up to even to my parents and say, you're in the wrong here. Do I stand up to my family? Sometimes for peace, I don't argue with them. So I remove myself from situations that are going to cause me more pain. Or am I going to think that the plus side of this is the amount of coaching I'm doing with people who are on this journey. Not just a twin flame journey, because I'm also coaching people who are on a spiritual journey or awakening to be their genuine selves. The bigger blessing is, right now, twin flame or no twin flame, it's put me in a situation where I feel proud and emotionally fulfilled in what I'm doing, in helping people. And I'm grateful that God chose me. Like, God chose me out of a lot of thousands and millions of people. God chose me to help 9 women at present. 9 women. And you know what? People in Islam would say to me, oh, well, be careful. You don't take these women into hell, or they don't take you to hell. But no, God sent me them to help them. They're not known to me. But God, why would God say that they're taking me to help by me helping them? I've not had no sexual relationship with them. I'm not meeting them in person. I have no negative desires with them. But it's the intention is to help them. So why would God take me to hell for talking to women that are not related to me in any blood form? So I'm going to allow what's happening. And I've known. Funny enough, the people I'm coaching always give me the positive feedback on how I've helped them release pain. And that's what more grateful for me. And I say to God, you know what? Twin flame or no twin flame, I'm grateful you chose me. You chose me for this path, and you chose me to help these people. And whether I'm a signpost or my reward is my twin flame, I'm happy. I'm happy to die tomorrow knowing I made a positive impact on someone's life. And that's it.
And I agree completely, because when you are in your purpose and you're walking in that, like, there's no comparison. It feels better and more fulfilling than anything you can imagine doing. And I just, like, that's what I want. That's what it's come to a point where that's what I crave in life, is like, I don't care. I really don't care if I make money or not. I really don't care, like, what I'm going to eat for dinner. I don't care about, you know, the twin flame stuff as much, as long as I am following this passion that God has given me. And it's something that I know because we're a similar age, it's also something that I feel like I've waited my whole life for this. I have been looking for this for 40 years now, and it's like it's about time that I stepped into it and figured out, that that's what this path was here for. This has been waiting for me all along for me to step into it and then walk in this purpose.
But you think about mine and your connection, it was your voice that drew me to you, right? And if I had this conversation with my mum or my brother or my sisters, they're going to say to me, she's the devil. She's taking you to hell. That's literally what it is, because you fell in love with her voice. No, it wasn't love. It was a connection from the heart to heart, because I felt pain in her heart. I felt pain in her voice. Equally, when I look at people's eyes, which I often avoid doing, is I witness pain in their eyes, and I can't feel nothing but I'm drawn to them. So yes, we crossed paths for a reason. Like I said earlier at the start, I never knew I would talk to someone in the USA, and that's me being 100% honest. But would I ever travel to USA? There's a very high chance, yes. I never thought that you would come, and there's a very high chance we're going to meet in person, thousands of miles away, and who knows, I might end up in Scotland with you. Like, we don't know where this path will take it. And it's a
I'm
very,
planning
very,
on a road trip.
well, do you know what? I'm just, listen, I'm being honest. I'm just hoping that my twin comes back and me and you getting on that road trip, because I know my twin's going to love Scotland just as much as I do. And I can imagine that road trip. That's me being honest. And I do feel it's more of our purposes. And I think we mentioned we don't look back at the path that's dissolved. We look at the one that's opening up. And watching Frozen 2, Elsa, where she literally, the more she walks, it's like that the path is lighting up. And that's what this path does. It just lights up as you walk through it. So, yes, a very, very interesting journey. Not just, it's the onion fairy, I say. We just get stripped away from all the layers. And I'm at the shiny surface now of the onion, just waiting to be cut up now. So, no, it's been very, very interesting. But I see your time's coming up as well.
It is.
I say, an absolute pleasure.
Same. I'm so glad we did this. We need to do this more often,
Of
podcast
course,
or not. Yes.
do you know what? I'm so like, it's very rewarding, and this is not just me saying this because of the podcast. It's just so rewarding to talk to people. That I don't care if I've got back-to-back coaching sessions, and that's all I'm doing, and I'm not charging a single penny on these people. And they will say to me, "I'll pay you." Well, I've not asked you for payment. I'm not asking you for payment. This is satisfying for me. So, of course, it's been amazing, this whole thing, and I genuinely pray to God every day that twin flame or no twin flame, like, I have to be grateful for this journey as well, as painful as it is. But I hope that God does give us our reward in the end and say, here's a carrot, it kept dangling, like, have it now. I feel you're tired, but no, it's been intense, but no, definitely we should do it again. And possibly, do you know what I am going to do is, once I've set up, I need to get a new laptop, but once I set up my Zoom calls, doing the twin flame coaching on there, just join up the Zooms whenever you're free. I think it'd be a
Awesome.
good idea to just jump in on there next
Yes.
week. So, but yeah. Well,
I love
what
that.
time is it here now?
It is 2:47 here.
Yeah, 6:40 or 7:45 here. So I need to get a quick bite before I do my next coaching call at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
But I hope you a lot of success in this.
Thank you.
And yeah, I can't wait to hear it as well.
Yeah, I'll as soon as I get it edited, which will probably be tomorrow, then I'll send the file to you over email so you can download it and keep it.
Excellent, excellent. But just do what you got to do with it as well, even if I don't hear it. Wherever it needs to go, it will
You
go.
will.
All right. Well, you enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll
Okay.
speak to
You
you.
too.
You take care. All
All
right, then.
right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.